Hey guys, welcome to the Unmasked Podcast. We're here again with Michael. I'm Zach. We're here with Michael.
Yes.
And we're actually, Josh is here today. He did not have scuba school like we said. So he showed up at my house today and came up here and said, I didn't know we were recording. And so we put a microphone in front of him and here we are. Anyway, so this is going to be the first installment of our mental health check-ins. We're just going to kind of talk about where we're at mentally right now in this moment. Just kind of, this is going to be a vulnerable, natural, you know, just conversation.
Yeah.
With friends.
With friends. Well, I like that.
That's actually kind of interesting because technically I was supposed to be at scuba school, but due to my mental state, I skipped it.
Well, I guess you brought it up, so you're up first, Josh. How? No, so you said you skipped it. Like, kind of tell us what's going on.
So
you're not alone. We're here for you.
That was good.
Essentially, my father is not doing very well health-wise. And last week on Thursday evening, I drove to North Carolina to see him.
How far of a drive is that?
It was like 10 hours.
10 hours, yeah.
Depends where in North Carolina.
Yeah, but we drove 10 hours.
Thanks, Zach.
It took us 10 hours to get there. I think about the same back.
Okay.
But we did hit some traffic. You can usually do it in like closer to nine and a half, but
yeah,
we ran into some traffic and we weren't in a super big hurry to go. But anyways, that's not the point.
Yeah.
So went down there, and when we first got there, he was actually like could talk and was awake.
Good.
Which was kind of cool because apparently he had been sleeping for like 57 hours previously,
goodness.
Which is part of why we went down there, because the nurse was saying, hey, this could be like last stages basically. So you might want to call your family and let them know. And that was Tuesday night I got that call. And then Wednesday I didn't go to work because mentally I was like, just don't know what to do.
Well, you had a lot to.
Yeah.
You had a lot to like figure out there.
Well, and the problem is there's a lot of baggage there.
Mm-hmm.
I've forgiven my parents for the things that we went through as kids, but there's still a lot of baggage there. And there's a lot of complication with my siblings too, because I have three older siblings and then three younger siblings that were adopted. And so my three younger siblings don't really understand our relationship with our parents because their relationship was different. Because I was 13 when they came into the picture. My parents were a bit different by the time I was 13.
Okay.
Than what they were when we were younger. Like anybody, they grew.
Yeah.
You know,
and that's a long period to have no growth in.
Right.
You know, so that I would expect that.
Yeah. But at the same time though, you never really forget those things. And for sure. And the hard part too is some of that is like some of the trauma and the things that happened are subconscious. You're not even consciously aware of some of the things that we went through.
Right.
So that makes it kind of hard too. Cause it's like, I can't even put into words some of the things and some of the feelings that I feel. I feel them.
Yeah.
So basically since that Tuesday night, my whole emotional state and my mental health has just been garbage.
Yeah.
Honestly, I'll just be completely honest. It's just garbage. Today at work, I just wanted to cry. If I would have put on a sad song, I would have been bawling. I just would have been, that would have been it. That's all it would have taken. I didn't, but I felt that. And I'm like, I don't feel this way at work, especially like me at work. Just, I don't really feel emotional a whole lot. So, especially at work.
Right.
So for me to feel that way, I'm just like, this sucks.
Yeah.
This is awful.
Then you're like stuck too.
Yeah.
Like you're literally kind of forced to be there.
And my job is very like manly.
Yeah. I was about to say,
very man dominated.
Oh, yeah.
Very manly kind of job.
I would also like to point out that most workplaces make it taboo to have emotions.
Right.
This is true.
Yeah.
Especially when you work around a bunch of men who, you know.
Like, here's the thing. I work in social work. And so it's like all women. So like, I feel if I just broke down and cried in front of them, like they would all, like the nurturing and caring side of them would just come out and it wouldn't be as judgmental. But like if I did that in the middle of a warehouse.
Yeah.
Right.
Like Josh and I, you work in a factory too, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah. We both work in a factory. If we cried, they'd just call us a soft hands and tell us to get back to work.
Yeah.
Like that's literally what would happen to me.
If not other choice words, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, you don't want to show your emotion.
Mm-hmm.
But even that, I just don't want to feel the emotion. Like the deeper side of it is, it's not even that I don't want to show it. I honest to God do not want to feel that emotion.
For sure.
I don't want to. But I also can't help that it's there.
Right.
Yeah.
Like there's nothing you can do to not feel the way you do. And like what you were saying earlier is you also like might not even know the why behind it, which makes it even that much harder to address.
Well, so here's the crazy part. Like for years now, right? For years, I've known that my dad was going to die, like at least 3 years. He has congestive heart or not congestive heart failure. Sorry. He has non-alcoholic liver disease, which has caused damage to his heart. He has like three different valves that need to be had work done.
Oh, wow.
And there's like five different things that is wrong with his heart. The surgeon said they won't even try to operate because they don't think he'll make it through the surgery.
Oh, wow.
And
that's been for 3 years. They've been saying that.
Yes.
Wow.
And because of his liver basically failing and being useless, they won't put him on a liver transplant because his heart's all messed up.
Yeah.
But they won't fix, so it's like this huge like catch 22 thing.
Yeah.
So basically there's nothing that any doctor is going to do. So I think my mom kind of chose to move down to North Carolina thinking maybe the doctors down there will say something different. Maybe they'll be able to help him. Because the doctors up here in Indiana basically said, there's nothing we can do. Just let him die, which she was not okay with. And I understand.
Right.
Well, who would be?
Right. Yeah, so
that's hard. So
this has been a process going on for a while where we've been told that my dad is going to die. It got, I want to say it got progressively worse about a year ago to the point where we knew there was a call. It was like, hey, might not be too long.
Yeah.
So when we actually took a trip to Florida and we had that planned out, and instead of just going to Florida, we wound up stopping in North Carolina. And
I remember that, yeah.
Because I was like, if this is the end, this might be my only opportunity to see him and talk to him and basically clear the air and do all that good stuff, you know, the apologies and all that. And we did. And it was really good. It was really healthy.
Good. Yeah.
I feel like nothing ever makes up for the things that happen,
right?
But you can get closure and you can say, okay, this is done and over with. I've moved on. It's not, it's not controlling me anymore. Mm-hmm. But for the long time now, I've basically just kind of numb in my brain. Okay. My dad's going to die. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those things that's going to happen. And you don't think much of it. It's like, I don't know how I'm going to feel. Probably won't feel anything at all. And then when I got that call Tuesday, it was like, it was just like a switch got flipped and all of a sudden there's all this emotion that I never expected to have.
Right.
Yeah.
Because I thought for sure I would be emotionless about the whole situation because I had been up to that point pretty much.
Yeah. Well, were you really, or were you just kind of telling yourself that?
And may have subconsciously been pushing those emotions down.
When I wasn't in his presence, when I wasn't around him.
Yeah.
I was very emotionless towards it. Mm-hmm. I really was, like, because there's that much, I don't know. I don't want to say animosity, but there was that much built up of the stuff.
You're just like suppressed.
And I was just kind of numb to it. And I just didn't feel anything. Mm-hmm. Seeing him in person though, and seeing the pain that he's in and how pitiful he looks, it's just like, I don't know. It just hit different, you know, and then hearing the emotion from my mom when she actually called me on Tuesday, like she's crying, she's upset, obviously. And I, in my brain at first, when she called me and she's crying, my first thought is, okay, he died. Right. So I'm just like, kind of like amped, my brain's already amped up, ready to hear that.
Well, for 3 years, and she's like, right, preparing, right.
Right. So that was kind of we're all just kind of waiting on that call. Honestly, we are.
Right.
It sounds terrible, but we are kind of waiting on that call because it's inevitable. It's just one of those things. Unless God steps in and does something, that's what's going to happen.
Certainly.
So it was unexpected. It was very unexpected for me to feel all that. Because, again, I'm not a big feely person usually.
Right.
So to feel all that emotion and all that I don't want to say anger, because I wasn't angry. I was just sad.
Yeah.
Really, it's just sad. You know, part of it is, you know, I never really had the relationship with my dad that I wish I had.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, so it's kind of like, it almost feels like I'm losing something that I never really had.
Right.
Because we never got to establish that.
Right.
I mean, don't get me wrong. When I was little, we had a decent relationship, whatever, but it just was never really what I wish it would have been.
Right.
Like what I would strive to have with my kids. If I had kids, it's not that. It never was that. Mm-hmm. So I think part of it is just the sadness that's potentially never going to happen.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, that's right. Cause not only like you'd be losing the opportunity to even have a chance at that is kind of where you're going with that.
For sure. And I would like to say you are valid in feeling all of that. Like that's a valid and okay response to have in this situation.
Valid, but scary.
Yeah.
Well, if you didn't expect yourself to feel any of that, and then
that's just it. Like, I thought for sure, like in the back of my head, I'm like, yeah, okay, there's a slight chance I might get emotional. I mean, if he actually dies, sure, I'll get upset. I'll cry at his funeral, whatever, because I'm human. I'm not completely numb. But at the same time, I completely did not expect to be that emotional at that moment.
It like blindsided you.
It really did. Hmm. It really did. So that being said, now here we are. I went down there, got to talk to him Thursday night, all of Friday, all of Saturday. He was completely non-responsive, just sleeping. Couldn't get him to wake up. Couldn't get him to pay attention to nothing. He did open his eyes a couple times, but didn't actually really, I mean, he wasn't really there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then I was actually staying at my sister's house Saturday night into Sunday morning. And my mom said when we got there Sunday morning that he woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning. So he was awake when we got there and he was eating. He was hungry. He was actually it was crazy because it's like, this is a man who just slept for like over 48 hours.
Yeah.
Just slept and was complete. You couldn't get him to come to, couldn't get nothing out of him. Excuse me.
You're good.
So that was really kind of like, unexpected too.
Right.
For him to come back to that much. It was like, wow. Like, is he really okay? Or is he really not okay?
Yeah.
So then there's a huge thing of confusion in there too. Like, is he actually getting better or is he actually getting worse? And then my mom posted something on Facebook today asking for people to pray for him because he wasn't doing good again. So I can only assume, you know, he's back to that. Right. Not really.
Mm-hmm. Not responding,
not coming to. And it's really hard when, you know, that's, it's not normal for somebody to be unresponsive for 48 hours or more.
For sure.
Like, it's just not. So. Like, I know in the last year he has been sleeping more, like he'll sleep, you know, 20, 30 hours at a time, which that's really unnormal. But at the same time, when your heart's all messed up and it can't hardly do what it's supposed to do, you sleep more because you're tired. Your body just can't handle it. So he has been sleeping more, but the amount is like doubled from what it was.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of crazy. So a whole lot of unexpected emotion.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I've never had to deal with a whole lot of loss in my personal life. Mm-hmm. We've talked a little bit about my mother-in-law, my wife's mom.
Yeah.
She really was the closest person to me that I've lost since I've been an adult. Mm-hmm. And I did not handle that well. Mm-hmm. I really did not. I kind of regressed into some things that I got away from. And I really just didn't handle it well. And unfortunately, I don't feel like I'm handling this very well.
Okay. Well, there's no way that there's no expectation of how you should handle anything.
For sure.
Because even like what you said, like there is no good way or bad way to react to things because it's just how you're going to react.
Mm-hmm. You say that, and I know that, and I would say that to somebody in my situation
when you're in that.
But sitting here in that,
like,
that is like the dumbest thing ever. I don't mean to be rude. I really don't.
No, I get
it.
It
feels like the dumbest thing in the world to say. And now I'm like, God, I really shouldn't say that to people because that sounds like
it sounds awful.
It's horrible. And I get it. I know it's true, but it just
that's the hard thing. Yeah,
doesn't make a difference. And that's the hard part is what can you do that actually helps? What can you do that actually makes a difference? And that's, I don't know. That's the hard part.
Are you asking in terms of like helping people through what they're going through or like, what do you mean by that part?
Yeah, to deal, like how, helper. what do you do? I mean, what do you do to deal? I mean, how do you get through that? I think this right here, the talking.
Yeah.
That's kind of cathartic and kind of helpful in that,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, actually getting it out there.
Right.
Talking to people.
Right. Because or else difference. It's all just up here.
Yeah.
And that's just yeah. where you're like struggling with it. And even then it's like all jumbled. So like yeah. once you have the ability to like put it out there, I know that helps me.
Dealing with it in isolation is not always the way to go. The first, remember my grandfather died. That was really the first time I had to deal with loss in my family. And I kind of had the same thing. Like, you know, I knew him, mm-hmm. but I didn't really like know him very well. Like as a child, I spent some time with him.
Yeah.
But by the point where, whenever he passed away, you know, I was 18 years old. He'd moved away. I didn't spend much time with him. And I dealt with it in the wrong way. Yeah. I bottled it all up inside and it got really, I got to a really dark place. So I just want you to know, like, we're here for you. If you need to talk at any moment, not, it doesn't even have to be the mic in front of us, obviously, but we're absolutely, both Michael and I'm speaking for Michael too, because I know he feels the same way. We are here for you to like, whatever, however we can help yeah. is what I'm saying.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I knew that before you said it.
I know, but I wanted to tell you.
Well, and honestly, I kind of reached out to Michael a little bit
yeah.
the other day and we mm-hmm. talked a little bit. We didn't talk a whole lot, but we did talk a little bit, enough at the time
yeah.
that I needed.
Mm-hmm. I got what I needed to know. Yeah.
Right. And I think the thing was today at work, it started off not as the greatest day in the world. I ended up having to do something that I really didn't care to do or didn't want to do. Yeah. Which just my mentality wasn't in the right place. Once I got my brain, you know, in the groove and in on track and saying, okay, I'm going to do this. Not that big a deal. Just do it. It wasn't that bad, but it was just the morning started off terrible, you know,
to that point.
So once I got to the end of the day, I was supposed to go to my scuba class, but I got off work, you know, like 3:15, 3:30, and the scuba class doesn't start till 6:00. So I'm like, okay, it's like 5 minutes away from my work in the opposite direction of my house. So my thought was, okay, I'm just going to stick around here. And so I went and got something to eat. Cause I'm like, if I got to do this class, I'm gonna be there from 6 to like 9:30. I really don't want to eat after right. 9:00 at night, you know,
yeah,
trying
yeah.
to be better, healthier, whatever,
which is good. That part of the holistic approach.
Right. Yeah. That's I'm trying. It's not easy, but I'm trying. Right.
Yeah.
So I'm just like sitting there. And that's it. I'm just sitting there alone in my thoughts. And I'm just like,
that can be, yeah.
And even with my wife called me and I'm talking on the phone with her and I'm just sitting there and I'm just like, you know what? I'll sit here for another hour and a half mm-hmm. before this class starts. This isn't healthy. I can't do this. I got that. My brain is just going too much. Mm-hmm. I can't, I need something to distract me.
Yeah.
So I decided I was going to drive home and, you know, at least drive home, do something for 40 minutes and then drive back to mm-hmm. the class. Okay. And then I got home and I looked at my backyard and I'm just like, oh darn, I have not mowed yet. And it needs mowed.
Yeah.
You know, that first mow of the season, it was really splotchy. You got some areas that are like 6 inches tall and it's
been raining and like,
it's just horrible. Right.
Jeez.
So I decided I was going to mow because for me, mm-hmm. I put in headphones, crank up some music and just mindlessly mow. I don't have to think. I don't have to, I don't have to be in any feelings. I don't have to be in anything. I just, I'm listening to music and I'm trying to complete a task.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't have to think. And that's what I told my wife. I was like, I just
need to mow.
Well, she asked me, she's like, are you going to go to your class still? I'm like, no, I'm just going to mow. Because I just need to do something that's mindless.
Yeah, almost right now.
That's what I need. Yeah, that's what I needed at the time. I just need to get out of this darkness that I feel it's trying to overtake me.
Yeah.
And I don't want to succumb to it. I don't. And I'm just like, I don't think talking about it at that moment was the right thing. I just needed something to distract me from it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, and now,
I'm sorry, guys. That's my alarm to put out the garbage.
Nice.
I got
chores.
Okay, so I stopped it. I didn't snooze it, so it won't go back off. Please, at the end of this podcast, remind me.
So what I'm saying
me.
Is now it's on us. It's our responsibility because
alarm.
He stopped.
It's your responsibility to make sure that the church's garbage is at the curb.
Yeah. So now, when Pastor yells at you, you're going to yell at us.
Actually, they were the alarm.
Yeah.
It was
totally Michael's fault. Yeah. I'm blaming Michael. He distracted me at the time I was supposed to do it. Yeah. So it's his fault.
You know what? I'll take that. You guys are helping me out. I'll take the blame for this.
Hey,
this one instant.
We're not helping you. We are doing this together.
Facts. There you go.
So I think that one of the great things, though, is I took that time to do that mindless task.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. Once I got cleaned up, I was like, okay, now what am I going to do? Well, here goes my brain starting to spiral again. So I'm like, okay, I know Michael said something about needing some help. At least if I go help him figure out what he needs to figure out, I won't be alone in my thoughts and my feelings.
That's fair.
I didn't expect to sit down and have a podcast
and work through them almost.
Right. That wasn't my expectation, that's okay. Because if I wouldn't, but the thing is, if I wouldn't have had that time to just mindly do that task, I wouldn't be able to have this conversation.
Right. Yeah.
I needed that. And I think that's what I'm trying to say is sometimes you need to just drown some stuff out and not be in your feelings because sometimes it's overwhelming and it just can be too much.
Taking a step back and kind of gathering yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you can, because then you'll be a lot more prepared and equipped to actually kind of work through whatever.
Reevaluate and then move forward.
Yeah. Because if you're thinking right in the moment, you're not going to get far.
I think the biggest problem that people have with that is they continually do that. They will perpetually.
They
keep putting it off.
They don't step back. They push it down.
Yeah. They suppress it. And that was
like. There's a difference between avoiding it completely and then just taking a step back to gather yourself. Like those are different things by far.
And I hate to say this because I really hate to say this, but it feels like that's what my mom is doing. She's avoiding the inevitable. She won't accept.
That's such a hard place to be too, though.
Right. Because, my sister's 40 years old now. So they've literally been together for like 41 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So 41 years, that's all they've known is each other.
Right.
And don't get me wrong. They have been completely like at odds with each other and they have been volatile and they have had knockdown, drag out, crazy stuff. Being down there, my mom told me some stuff. I'm like, my mom threw a high chair through a sliding glass window. Like they argued and they fought and they went through it, but they worked it out, you know?
Right.
They fought through the hard stuff and stayed together all that time.
Which is almost more impressive than anything. Cause nowadays
the
first thing they struggle with, it's done. It's over. They don't work through it. They call it quits. So that's admirable.
Yeah,
I agree. And that's part of the thing that makes it hard, too, because it's like, how do you tell a woman who's been with this man for 41 years that she has to let him go?
Yeah.
Like, how do you say that? I love my mom. I love my dad. Yeah, we've had our issues. But how do you say that?
Yeah.
And that's hard.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
I couldn't figure out a way to say it. I honestly haven't said it to her because
there are words to say.
There really are. I can't even think of one tactful way to just, you know.
I think it's one of those things you have to let her work through in her time because kind of like.
But the problem with that is in the interim of that.
She
is doing things and I don't know how to say this right. She's essentially prolonging his suffering.
Mm-hmm. I gotcha.
Because she won't let him go. Mm-hmm. He has said that the only reason why he won't just let go is because he's afraid of what happened to her.
Yeah.
And that's such a hard.
And it's like he said the last time we were down there, this has been, like I said, months ago. Mm-hmm. He said, I'm tired and I just don't want to do this anymore, but she won't let me go. And it broke my heart. It just broke my heart. And that was months ago. And she's still, and I'm not mad at her for it.
Right.
I don't blame her for it. But at the same time, it's like,
You want her to
how long are you going to make him suffer because you're afraid of being alone?
Yeah.
And I get it. I mean, I understand 41 years is a long time to be with somebody to no longer have them.
I can't even like mentally put myself in that position and be able to like have an idea of how I would do like.
Yeah, there's no way I could even.
Because I've been with my wife for 2 years and I feel like I would do what your mom is doing out of just lack of better terms. Like I just. Selfish? See, not calling your mom selfish.
Yeah,
like,
that's the way
myself.
That's like, the thought in my head. It almost like, seems kind of selfish.
Yeah,
right.
But that's why I've had this conversation with my wife like multiple times because of all this. And I would encourage you guys to do the same thing. I set down boundaries with my wife. I told her if this ever happens, if we're ever in this similar situation, do not let me continue to live like this.
Yeah,
do not. Because that to me isn't life.
Yeah.
If you are not there more than you're actually there, I mean,
what's the point?
Right.
Right.
And I know my dad well, because I'm a lot like him in a lot of ways. And I don't like to admit that because a lot of his flaws are my flaws too. You know, a lot of his strengths are my strengths and a lot of weaknesses he has, I have.
Yeah.
So I know a lot of the way he thinks and I know a lot of the way he is. And I know without a doubt that this isn't what he wants. This isn't what he expected or would want out of life. And it's really hard because I know that. And I know my mom knows that, but at the same time, she's just holding on. And I don't want to say, I don't want to blame God, but in a sense, it's almost kind of like because she is religious, because God has done miracles in her life. She's seen them firsthand, right?
Right.
She's almost like, well, God just needs to do a miracle and miraculously heal him. And I'm like, oh, he can. I'm not saying he can't. It's very possible, but at the same time, it's almost like a false hope that she has.
Well, I would like to say something that a pastor once told me about this is sometimes if the person goes to heaven, I will say whenever the person goes to heaven, they are healed. It is a miracle in of itself. I'm not sure where your dad is. I haven't met the man, but I'm just saying if that's the case, miraculous healing immediately. You know, it may not be here where the miracle takes place.
Well, and nobody likes to look at it that way because it's like, oh, their miraculous healing is death. That sounds kind of...
Okay. I know we're talking about... This kind of goes right in hand with that. And not, if it's okay, I just want to talk about... So...
Go for it.
There's this... So my dad is the pastor at our church, right? And
what?
So... Crazy, right? So he left... And so whenever he goes, I kind of have to pick up that mantle of like the pastoral duties.
Right.
And typically it's nothing ever like too serious, right?
Until this week, literally
this past week, he goes on this like conference down in Florida for like a week and I'm left.
Conference. I heard he was going to golf.
Yeah, we're going to call it conference.
It was a conference.
It was a work conference on a golf course.
Vacation conference?
No.
Hey, he needs it, to be fair.
Yeah.
He does. He does. If you're listening to this, you deserve
you
that.
You deserve that.
Don't let anyone tell you otherwise.
Support your pastor, guys. They need vacation.
Facts.
Mostly because of you.
That's crazy.
I'm over there.
Anyways, so one of the responsibilities I picked up while he was gone, and like this isn't necessarily like the pastoral hat, but it felt like it because of how people were addressing me. When there's two older ladies in our church who are very sick, and one of them, and it's just such an interesting contrast because one of them is like, I am not ready to go. Like, will you like just like pray and like you know be there? And then the other one is like, I am ready to go. I want to go. Please take me. Now is my time.
Yeah.
And then, but her daughter has some like mental health stuff that she deals with and which kind of affects her reasoning abilities. Yeah. Uh-huh. And so like, it was so hard because she was basically asking the whole time I was there, like, can you pray that she gets better and to remove the cancer so that she doesn't die? Meanwhile, the like her mom, the elderly lady who's
patient,
answer and about to go is like ready.
Yeah.
And it's right. like,
yeah, that's a difficult situation.
How do you,
it's very, very similar. Cause you have the patient who's basically ready to go that says, hey, I'm done. Let's let go. And then you have the loved one who is like, God, step in and do something and make this right.
Exactly. That's exactly why I was kind of thinking that correlation. Like, oh, wow.
Oh, you yeah.
know? And you mentioned earlier that, you know, that you use the word selfish. I would say yes and no. I would say yes, that is the case in some cases. Also, in some cases, out of their love for that person,
right,
they don't understand what it would be like without them.
Yeah,
they're almost afraid to that they're afraid because all they know is that love that they have for that person,
right?
You know, and there's not an easy way to navigate that conversation with somebody. There's really not. In reality, they just have to work through it themselves. That's what you said that earlier. I mean, that I have loved ones who are still holding on to things to other loved ones passing, and it's been years, and they still can't seem to work through it. And there's nothing I can say or any of us can say to push them through that.
Right.
You know, all we can do is just be there for each other. You know, that's really all it boils down to is, when someone's going through a tough time, make sure they know they're not alone.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Well, that's, you know, the stages of grief.
Mm-hmm.
Some people fly right through the stages of grief.
Yeah.
And some people take forever to go through those stages.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's interesting because I was actually just talking to a young lady at the church about this not that long ago because she was hurt. And I kind of explain to her, it's like the hurt you feel, you know, there's a certain level of grief there,
right?
I don't think we think about this way, right? But when you lose something that you had, a relationship with somebody, it changes and it becomes something different unexpectedly,
right?
That's a loss. That's a grief situation.
It's almost a wound.
Loss.
It's like, so it's an emotional wound.
And that's what I was telling her. So if you look at the stages of grief, okay, at the very beginning, most people have denial. Mm-hmm. You're just denying and this isn't really happening. You know, and it's like sometimes people live in that stage for
a while,
it seems like, before they finally get to acceptance. And it's like at some point you have to deal with that emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And don't get me wrong, I'm completely 100% deal with your emotion, have your emotion, but give it a time frame. Like only you can set that time frame. Nobody can do that for you.
Mm-hmm.
But I would recommend setting a time frame for yourself. Say, okay, I'm going to let myself feel this emotion for 2 days, three days, a month, whatever works for you. Yeah. But at that point, once you get to the point where you're okay, I've given this enough time, you have to move to acceptance and you have to start dealing with, okay, I accept this happened. How do I move past it now? How do I get to that where I'm moving on?
Dealing with like the now what?
Yeah.
And what is next? Yeah.
It's so many times we want to stay in that denial stage and we just want to ignore or pretend like it's not actually happening. And I feel like that's where my mom is at. She's in that denial. Like, this isn't really what's happening. Like, something is going to change.
Hmm.
And it just hurts to see her that way.
That's rough.
Yeah.
I just want to say, I appreciate you. Absolutely. I appreciate that you... Like, it's not easy. One, we literally threw you.
Yeah, we literally said, get up here, sit in this chair, here's a microphone.
Start spilling your guts. But, like, that takes a lot of courage. And the fact that you're doing it, and I don't know.
I don't know about courage, but I've always been of the mindset that if my experience, my personal experience, pain, happiness, anything, any personal experience I've had in life, if anything that I've gone through or I've done can help somebody else in some way, even if it's just to let them know they're not alone, like if that can help somebody in some way, I will put myself on the chopping block. I will sacrifice whatever I need to do. I will put myself out there.
That's very admirable and honor.
Yeah,
I will say.
I don't know about that. I don't it always
is,
feel that way.
It absolutely is.
That. Yeah, that's a huge deal.
People
don't do that.
I just feel
people won't do that with things that aren't as high stakes.
Yeah.
I just feel like my
people won't give up McDonald's to help someone else.
You can have all the McDonald's. I don't want nothing to do with McDonald's, but oof. Anyways.
There goes our sponsorship.
Right?
McDonald's, if you don't want to sponsor us because of that, that's on you.
Anyways, Josh.
My heart is to help people, though.
Yeah.
Like, I even when I was as young as I can remember, that was my heart, was to help people.
Yeah.
You know, you couldn't get me to help my parents because, you know, they're my parents. Different. I hated helping my parents for whatever reason.
Right. No, I won't.
Anybody else, literally anybody else, I would help.
Right.
I mean, somebody works. Needs help, I help them. That was just, that's always been a part of who I am.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like now I'm more capable to help with my experience and my words.
Mm-hmm.
Because my physical body isn't what it used to be. Because it used to be a lot of physical. I can't count how many times I've helped people move.
Yeah.
I've helped so many people move.
Well, when you have a motorcycle like accident, always need to move.
Wow. I was going to say when you have a truck, people are going to talk to you about moving.
You know, the funny part about that is once I got a truck, I've actually helped less people move.
Really?
Hey, you know what?
That's
same. It's weird.
People are
like, I don't want to ask him because I'm sure people ask him all the time because he has a truck. So they don't ask.
Oh,
that might be part of it.
It's a reverse psychology
kind of thing going on.
That might be part of it, but I think most of it was I helped a lot more when I was actually like younger, early like teenage years and my early 20s.
When you had a
I didn't get a truck until I was like thirty something. So people are like, "Oh, he's getting old. He's not as strong and young and vibrant. He can't carry the big heavy stuff." So
let's not ask him. Let's call Zach instead.
Right.
He moved a piano.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Big heavy one.
I didn't move that. We had seven people on there, guys. I'm not taking credit for that.
That was a day for sure. Josh,
I wasn't even involved in that.
Josh. I do want to say thank you because,
no problem.
Like what you were just saying, like just using from teaching others. From your experiences, like I personally have like benefited so much just from our relationship. Like earlier in the first podcast, I talked about kind of that really dark place I was in for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And you were one of the people that whenever I'd come back to Indiana and I was going through actually probably the lowest part when I hit rock bottom, I was back here in Indiana, which makes sense. No offense, Hoosiers.
Hey.
Your cornfields make me sad sometimes.
I could see that.
Oh, yeah, totally.
But, like, luckily, like, I had you, and I didn't... What's interesting is looking back, and I said this earlier, is a lot of that's a blur. So I don't even really remember when you and I, one, met. Like, I don't remember when we first met. I don't remember how our relationship got to the point that I was even comfortable to talk to you to those levels. It just happened.
I don't know. I don't remember. Like,
isn't that wild?
You know what's crazy is if I asked my wife, she would probably know better than I do because my memory is not that great on these things.
I want to point out, I also don't remember when I met Josh.
Yeah.
It's just kind of like all three of us have known each other for forever.
It does kind of feel like that. Yeah.
Yeah. But like,
we're the three whittle pigs.
We are the three
kindred spirits.
Facts. But like, so thank you. And that's a big part of why I love having you here is because you're not old, but you have so much life experience. Like you've gone through so much and you're just a...
Yeah, you're not even 10 years older than either of us.
Well, no, you're not that old. You do have grandkids.
Yeah, but that's kind of because you married into it. Anyway.
To be fair, Brandon, who's on our team, has way more gray hair than you. And
he does. His hair looks like he's half skunk.
Yeah, he's... He's gonna look fine as that salt and pepper.
He absolutely will whenever he's like 35.
Yeah.
Wow.
Brandon, if you're listening to this, I'm not sorry.
No, Brandon's laughing. I can hear him laughing. He's right down the street.
Right. It's funny because I am stubborn.
Yeah.
So part of that is simply because of my stubbornness.
Like, I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh at that.
No, go ahead. No, I'll tell you straight up. So this is...
At least he's self-aware.
This, right? So this is part of how I know I'm a product of my parents, right? My dad and my mom are both extremely stubborn people, right? They're both very stubborn. Yeah. And I get it honestly from both of them. I have had competitions with pretty much every person I've ever been in a relationship with, except my current wife, about who's more stubborn.
And you won all of them.
I have won every single time. And I've seen the results of that. So I'm like, I'm never going to do that with my wife. I'm not doing it. I'm not going to compare. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going down that road.
There you go.
Because it obviously I won previously and those didn't work out.
Look you, where that got
you. To be fair, you would also win this time.
Yeah. I probably would, honestly. And you I think I test. Know.
That's not
I think I know well enough that I would win. So there's not a point in actually.
That's not a slight to you. That's more saying Mindy is not stubborn.
Mindy's also one of the most patient people.
She is, absolutely.
To deal with.
Honestly, like, you guys, yes, you guys see that side of her. I see when she loses her patience. Oh. So, trust me, she can be a lot more stubborn than
ooh, I'm going to stop think. It right here on your behalf. I want to save you some brownie
points. No, I love my wife. I love my wife.
But there you go.
I would agree.
No, don't put a but out.
No, I no would, but. You no. love your wife. There are no
I
conditions.
I love my wife.
You love your wife unconditionally.
I would agree, though, that I am more stubborn than her.
There you go.
Okay, there you go.
There you go.
There you go.
I would agree with that.
Guys, I don't know about you. This has been beneficial. It's helped. Even like just sitting and listening, and I'm excited. I want to do this more often.
For what it's worth, I actually feel better.
Really?
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, like I said, a little cathartic just talking about right. things.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Especially with some good friends.
Well, I would consider myself a friend.
I'm glad we're not in a warehouse friend. Right now because I might cry a little.
A warehouse?
You know, or a factory. Sorry, factory.
Oh, a factory. Yeah, soft hands.
All right.
Manufacturing
facility.
All right.
Thanks so much for tuning in to the Unmasked podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. You can find more content like this on our website at unmaskedculture.org. While you're there, consider supporting us by making a donation. Your donation will help us pursue our mission to change how the world views mental health. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss out on future episodes. Thanks again for listening, and until next time, start the conversation.